Hello and welcome to the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and today I'm going to rant for a while about men's health. Like all things health-related, in men's health, there are elements of nature and nurture, but there's also no, sir. I shall explain. Now, it's a well-known fact that men all over the world can expect to live shorter lives than their female counterparts. Of course, there's an old joke that asks why men live shorter lives than their wives, and the sarcastic response, because they can. But it's a serious and very real problem. In the UK, recent figures from 2017 to 19 showed that, on average, men die 4 years earlier than women, and are also far more likely to develop certain, well, gender-neutral diseases like hernias, aortic aneurysm, and kidney stones. The gap's even been evident in COVID-19 outcomes, with 2.8% of men dying from the disease, compared with only 1.7% of women. Still tragic, but clearly a difference. This gender health gap exists across time, societies, and space. Even as lifespans have increased overall, the gap remains. But why does this health gap exist, and what can we as physicians do about it to help rectify the imbalance? You know, as a doctor, I think I can state with some confidence that even amongst healthcare workers, men are not as good as women at looking after their health. And the reasons behind this gap are multifaceted and complex, but I'm going to do my best to unravel at least some of it. If you ask a car insurance guru, they will tell you that the most dangerous thing you can put in a vehicle is a teenage boy. And the next most dangerous thing you can put in a motor vehicle is, well, two teenage boys. Premiums to insure boys are higher than girls. Why? Simply put, males are at bigger risk of accidental death than females because they tend to take on silly risks and more dangerous activities and pastimes. Think motorbikes and extreme sports. Let's be clear. I am not being sexist. It's a fact. Let me give you one example. Although the percentage of women riding motorbikes is rising, it's currently around 20% in most first world countries, female bike accident patients are less often drunk, more often wear helmets, were transported by emergency medical services and arrived at the emergency department during the day compared to male patients who tended to come in at night without a helmet and drunk. And if you look at the females, they tend to have a significantly lower injury severity score and an adjusted odds ratio of in-hospital mortality and morbidity. In addition, significantly fewer female patients were admitted to the intensive care unit, and female patients had a significantly shorter hospital and ICU length of stay, all in proportion to bike use. I think I can safely say, I rest my case, Your Honour. And jobs like working on oil rigs, firemen, in the military. Of course, social and political mores have historically dictated that women should not be exposed to such risks. But that's changing. And I think we're going to see, I bet we're going to see, some sex-related mortality differences in favour of women. But there's another major cause, and for that I'd reference three friends of mine, just their first names. Richard, Tom, and David, all very smart. One a surgeon, one a lawyer, one a very talented artist. Colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, coronary artery disease. All three dead way, way, way before their time. But all three might have been saved if they had acted and seen their doctors. But they didn't, because they were men. Men embrace risky behaviours in many areas of their life, and healthcare is seemingly no different. Psychologically, men take health behaviour risks that influence outcomes by acts of omission as well as the acts of commission I've referenced. Simply put, men are much less likely to visit a doctor when they're ill or to undertake wellness visits. And even when they do come in to visit us, men are less likely to report symptoms. I'm a doctor, I'm also a fella. I know this to be true. An N of one, yes, but I know it to be true. Efforts to influence risky behaviours abound. wear a seatbelt, don't drive drunk, and so on. But what of healthcare? We need to take action by encouraging men to come and see us and be open about their health concerns when they do visit. There are two elements to this problem. First, encouraging men to seek preventative care, such as regular blood pressure and other cardiovascular risk factors, and creating a space where they feel comfortable to disclose embarrassing symptoms that might hint at an underlying serious disease. Look, brilliant awareness campaigns like those in Britain encouraging men to check their balls, and celebrities, footballers and so on, talking about prostate cancer does almost certainly help. But the fact remains that on average, men visit their family doctor 4 times a year in comparison to the 6 times a year that women go, and there are many men who don't go at all. Men see this as macho. It's self-reliant. They eschew behaviors they see as representing weakness. They want to be superheroes. And yes, fear of a negative outcome plays a part, like the kid hiding their face in a corner outside the principal's office. If I can't see them, they can't see me. Look, I remember that feeling. We need to do more to help men understand the benefits of early diagnosis. For instance, cancer is the second leading cause of death in men, and screening for prostate, lung, and colorectal cancer helps. And in my experience, as someone who did colonoscopy and looked after a lot of colorectal cancer, if I talk to a woman about considering a screening colonoscopy, in my experience, again, it's my experience, she'll listen, ask sensible questions, and get it done. A bloke, he'll make some sarcastic joke and be out of there like a rat out of a sewer. I think you might agree that's an appropriate analogy. So let's assume you've got a man in your office or clinic. It's all about making that appointment count. Ensure they feel comfortable. Create an environment that encourages them to disclose all of their symptoms and undergo suitable examination. Keep in mind how vulnerable they feel. As doctors, this is routine, but this could be a lifesaver for your patient. Let's give you an example. A fella comes in to see you with hip pain from a fascia lata injury after golf. Take the time to bring up screening that might be timely. Start a discussion about mental health. Maybe even talk about the golf game. Talk to your patients. Women are more prone to volunteer information to their doctors, men less so. I could bore you all with references. This is fact, it's not fiction. And additionally, socially, women tend to discuss health issues with their peers. Men? No way. No guy is going to talk about his varicose veins, constipation or hernia over a beer with his golf buddies. It ain't happening. But counterintuitively, this is interesting. One study found a correlation between men who had strong ideals around masculinity as being actually more likely to accurately disclose the more embarrassing symptoms such as diarrhea or depression to a female physician rather than a male counterpart. Maybe that suggests something about being comfortable in their skin. But this is clearly a much more deep-seated problem in our culture, with man-to-man conversations rarely centered around points of vulnerability. If you look at the way men sit together at a bar, they'll sit side to side. Women will sit facing each other. Men are far more protective. It's something imbued deep, deep, deep in our genes. Food for thought if you're a male physician who feels that your male patients are underreporting their conditions. You know, straddling both of these issues is the matter of men's mental health. Broadly speaking, men are more than 3 times likely to die from suicide than women, with 2019 in the UK sadly marking a new high of recorded suicides, and with COVID, that is going up, I am certain. I have personally lost colleagues to suicide and recently picked up on some signs in a male friend which worried me. The right amount of prodding and he opened up and I could then help support him. Had I not asked those questions, who knows what might have happened. With COVID preventing face-to-face consultations, we have to raise our awareness for the subtle signs of mental health issues in men. Ask about irritability, sudden unexplained anger, loss of control, risk-taking and aggression, or an excessive or increased use of alcohol or drugs. Don't be shy to ask if a family member can be brought into the conversation. My experience has been that the guy in question will be so very grateful for the help and the chance to talk. No, we're not good at asking for directions as fellas, certainly not when driving. But when help's at hand, we're usually smart enough to accept it. In my opinion, virtual healthcare is a game changer in the space. In the workplace in particular, more and more companies are investing in digital mental health services, which may be a far more attractive option for men than visiting a mental health professional in person. In the United States, a healthcare at home option was deployed to help those battling addiction, people who were worried about being seen to enter an addiction facility. And back in my medical school days, the sexually transmitted disease clinic seemed to change name on a regular basis, purportedly to avoid embarrassment for those attending. You might say that this is a case of, well, a rose by any other name. The message is clear. We must do more to raise awareness of the disparity in health outcomes between men and women and make men aware of the dangers of not seeking medical attention. There's an old adage that men must be the stronger sex, but this ideology is not only outdated, it's dangerous. Let's all encourage men to hang up their superhero capes and report their health concerns promptly and accurately. Just as society has demanded appropriately that women must get equality and pay in other aspects as their male counterparts, men must do the same for their healthcare, for themselves, and for those who rely on and love them. And if nothing else, I want to honour the memory of my friends, Richard, David and Tom. You were good friends, guys, and I'm so very annoyed you're not here. Although different diseases were the pathology, the etiology, the root cause was hubris. So let's put an end to that, everyone. So, folks, that's the end of this particular rant. You've been listening to me, Dr. Jonathan Sakia, and I look forward to welcoming you again next Friday when I'll be back to pick the brains of a new and exciting guest here on the EMG Health Podcast. Take care and bye for now.